You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
This is Quantum Leap Book Club, and our regular host, Parisha, will not be joining us tonight as she's traveling and teaching. So her co-host will cover tonight's material. We have Geraldine Delby Ball, an environmental biologist from Sydney, Australia. We have Rosemary Heyer, English teacher working with children in Frankfurt, Germany. Dr. Joyce Mullenhauer, doctor of naturopathy in Kingman, Arizona. And myself, Marianne Love, psychologist from Melbourne, Australia. And unfortunately, Trina Cooper is also unavailable for this evening's. And we also have Mike Dillard, all the way from Canada, joining us. So our book today is Robes. It's been very, very exciting. And we're actually covering today chapter 4 all the way through to chapter 9. So, and I believe we have Geraldine Delby Ball to take it away today.
And it is an exciting set of chapters. And yes, starting with 4. And as the title suggests, it's all about breaking up of nations. So what does this mean? Well, we have our picture created for us again, and we can feel through our author that she's feeling down, she hasn't made up her mind where she's meant to be, has something gone wrong? And while she's in all of that inner turmoil, she sees the people again, the little men in the brown robes, and they are quite bright, you know, good morning and all that sort of thing. And she, instead of fighting at this time, she's now allowing to at least watch. And a huge map appears in front of her. It's got Russia. It's got pretty much actually it goes through the world. So we start with Russia and then we move down to parts of Canada and Africa and India and the United States. And as she says, even China. And as she's watching this vision, it starts to break up into from nations into little pieces and then smaller pieces. And she's thinking, what are they breaking into? What are these smaller pieces? And while she's feeling that, there is an earthquake. And she's realizing that there's this breaking up of the physical pieces of the land. And because of the difficulties caused by earthquakes, the natural divisions in the US didn't last long. And then there's new boundaries and new autonomy. And as she's saying, in the vision, some parts are experiencing this this real, one could call animosity or civil disturbance, while others just seem to be breaking into nations or smaller groups of people, or, you know, almost family size, family business size. And it's really this unfolding that we're going on the journey with her. And all this time, the people in the brown robes say, we've pointed out to you that humans are moving beyond their present structures. And they've had this life. This life is democracy and the folding of nations. But don't destroy yourselves in the transition. It's a kind of a new world. It's actually really positive. And as they say here, most importantly, you will need to shape the direction and chart the path for the next few stages of human development. So while she's watching a change, she's really given the strength to know this is an unfolding. And as they say, people, as people, you must learn to be careful in your thinking. And that careful of our thinking can be, how are we actually creating it? So she's got here, you know, our question to, this is from the little men in the robes. Our question to you as a people would be, you know, what's gone wrong with the power that millions of people focus fear on one person or one organization? There's nothing to fear. She's got that in italics, you know, with exclamation marks. And how is it that millions of hearts working together cannot come up with enough love to convert one fearful leader? the world has fallen out of love. And it's sharing this and taking all of us on this journey. And as it writes as well, you know, real great kings and the excellent presidents, the truly wise people, are able to lead people to be themselves more clearly. So again, we go through a number of additional pages in chapter 4 that's really looking at responsibility. What is responsibility of a good leader? To study the people well, learn their strengths and weaknesses, and empower them to be the best that they can become. And then to look around at what we may see at the moment, you know, and does that fit that definition? And if not, and it changes, and as it said, you know, she's saying it never really mattered to her what particular town or state or politics until she read that book, The Third Wave. And that's when it started to bring her around to realizing that there's a lot more going on out there. And it comes towards the end of chapter 4 and saying, you know, we can look at money that got into the churches and there was unjust practices, but then that Catholic Church sort of fell apart as a structure as well. So what are we looking at now? And what are the forces on the politics? What are the key things going on? And how do we create that? And she shares that even at a dinner, there's a Thanksgiving dinner and she's there and her own family members were talking about, you know, they were part of the Pacific War during World War II. And yet another person who was at the same dinner was affected by that war. So now there's these opposites and they're both people here today. So it's that asking again. And she's saying, you know, her father became visibly upset and stopped eating, but wouldn't look at her. And she's like, no, I wouldn't kill anyone for any reason. Whereas he's saying, I risked my life to make sure what you had. So we're getting these obviously changes or evolution in a human perspective that the war isn't what's going to create. Killing doesn't create the outcomes. And she's watching, continue to watch as the countries change. And as she says, the most significant sign of the passing of the nations, the rise of the business to power, the transition for the next stage of human development, the structures of big business will temporarily replace nations as the structures that hold and manage power. So it's temporary. And as this continues forward, they're seeing resistance, they're seeing groups set up, they're seeing positivity, they're seeing moving back to earth, they're seeing family groups and linkage to people's own lineages. And the whole journey takes us right through it to laws being passed. When they're passed to seriously restrict freedom, there's enough people coming up and saying, okay, I'm not going to do my tax then. It's funny that it talks about tax because that's a big thing to a lot of us. And it's like, there's whatever generation you're in, this is giving the example that there's example of isolated tax payers just saying, too big, too hard, too many rules, I'm not doing it. So it moves through chapter 4, looking at the old institutions changing because they're out of alignment, out of touch with where the people are. But she says when it finally gets back to her, she's feeling numb. As it says, I didn't think I could watch anything else the little men had to show me or listen to the future anymore. And then the pictures began to fade. And then she said she's not sure what to say. I mean, how would any of us be sure what to say after watching all of that? But as they say, there's no need to say anything. No need to hurry or worry. Take your time. Think about what you've seen and begin in simple ways to prepare for change. And with courteous nods, they leave. And that's where I'll leave chapter 4.
Thank you. Very well covered. Beautiful. And I know Rosemary is going on to the next chapter 5. What have you got to share, Rosemary?
Yeah, thank you, Miriam. Well, in this chapter, she's actually trying to get a hold of all that information we just heard, you know, all the things she heard from the people. And she's really also, while she's doing that, she's getting some deeper insights about her own self, you know. And So first she's battling with the idea that these structures are falling down and that the United Nations and then all the national governments are just kind of like disappearing or changing their form. And she really must confront to herself that she never thought about how all these structures got there. I mean, you know, who put the street lamps on and how does the stoplights and the stop signs get put on and who's taking care of shopping centers and parking lots? So she's really realizing that she's just, you know, like shared before by Geraldine, she's just following an authority figure and feels kind of comfortable, you know, that she is under what she calls the umbrella of a nation. And it's kind of making her really scary and she doesn't know how to deal with that really. And then when she thinks about it more deeply, she even gets completely lost and the chapter is called Falling into an Emptiness. And that's how she feels, like someone has pulled the rug under her. And then she shares another insight that she realizes that maybe a nation isn't structures and buildings and streets and freeways. Maybe it's an idea or a concept created by people. And that intention of people actually created a nation. And maybe the changes also are going to be created by people. So she explains to herself also maybe why so-called primitive humans, she calls them primitive people, wanted to live in groups, not alone, and also insisted in having gods so they can give them the authority and felt also a sense of security. And then she debates the idea of freedom. Well, she thinks that actually she felt pretty free under the security of a nation. She can take care of her life and do a little day-to-day things. But then she realizes, oh my God, but if freedom really means what I want to do, she can't do what she wants to do under that structure. I mean, she has to go to work, she has to get money, she has to take care of her house and her mortgage, and she has to get a car and all that stuff. So she's not really free. And then she realizes, well, what if these structures are all gone? What does that mean for her? And she thinks, well, maybe I have to take care of my own food, I have to take care of my warm shelter, I have to do all these things. And she gets really anxious about realizing that she's even less free if the nation or the so-called authority is gone. And she's kind of trapped in that thought, and we can see how she's battling with her idea of inner authority and taking responsibility and maybe taking on the idea that she has to be responsible for her own life. And she also shares how challenging it is for her to write down all this. As we have heard also in the doctoral chapters, I mean, she has actually telepathically transferred pictures, and it's not in linear fashion, and it's a whole huge volume of information. And she's not only just passively watching, she's actually inside of that, she's experiencing it. So when she finally finds words for it, she's so frightened still about it. But she does make a big point, and Geraldine has shared that before, she captures also the good cheer and the positive idea the little man get across. I mean, the perspective they give her, they keep telling her that this information is important for her and that really nothing is written in stone and there's nothing really to fear. It's all up to her and to the people. And so she finally kind of gives in and goes back to her everyday work, but she can hardly do anything because she has to sift through her mind all these informations. And this is the end for me right now for chapter 4.
Beautiful. Thank you. And we have Joyce on, yes. Or Joy, actually, yes. On chapter 6.
I am here ready to roll. So I'm going to be talking today and sharing the chapter that's called Leaders, Welfare, and Land. And the information that's shared in this chapter illustrates the need to examine not only the past and the current situations we find ourselves in, but to consider future possibilities. If we have an intention to participate in creating a new world and transforming the present world, and some views that Penny witnesses through the guidance of the little brown men have already happened, and some are current today. The different possibilities described to Penny through telepathy I believe are offered as a challenge to actions that must be taken by us. It is emphasized in this chapter that people must take their lives and how they live their lives into their own hands. The truth is, we create our own circumstances. I'll say that again. We create our own circumstances. So the Industrial Revolution is a period of history that is touched on. The ground motives at that time seemed appropriate in retrospect. To quote from the book, the invention of engines to replace human energy was driven by a deep need for self-expression. It was also driven by the desire to make physical labor easier for everyone and the hope of making life better by providing basic material goods for as many people as possible. As history has proven, the goals became power and wealth for the few. The issue became to get people off their land and into factories where they could be controlled. A man's value no longer was measured by his health, his ability to survive, but instead, how much money did he possess? And how many people's lives is he or she controlling? So we fast forward to our current situation, which has obviously evolved over time from changes, some of which did start at the Industrial Revolution. As the little man described, we now have what could be called spoiled, in quotation marks, members of society who never learned how to care for themselves. Instead, they demand from their government all the necessary basics of life. So Geraldine has already talked about some of the qualities of leaders, but this chapter goes into quite a lot of information on how new leaders are needed desperately, who have the courage to speak out boldly. Different descriptions of a new style of leaders are suggested in this chapter. Some of this would be that new leaders will begin efforts. They'll be trying very hard to cut back the structure of government. Some others will teach new ideas and encourage people to take responsibility for themselves. So there's many variations suggested in this chapter of what a leader could do and be in the world that is developing. So the prediction by the little man is, in spite of efforts from the brave new leaders, some people are going to resist because they wanted to stay under that umbrella that has already been referred to. And these little men lead us to future possibilities. They describe these leaders and give us a sense that maybe it's going to be, and more than a maybe, it is going to be different. So as the chapter comes to a close, the little men make a statement about the importance of learning to see backward in time and forward in time as one of the most basic skills in human evolution that we need today. I have a strong impression for myself of how critical the practice is to review my past when relevant to a situation, as well as to look forward to the future I am creating by my present thoughts and actions. We are living in the midst of total change, but I am well aware that change has always been constant in our world and in our individual lives. The more amazing question to ask ourselves is, why do we show resistance to a principle that has always existed? A state of stagnancy would actually destroy our world. And that is my information from this chapter.
Thank you, Joyce. So that leads me to the chapter I'm covering this evening, which is Chapter 7, and it's called World War 3, which is a pretty dramatic, but it gives us lots of really interesting information that will help us through many times in our life, I think, if we take it on. So But she, the little men visit again, and they give her a lot of other visions of what is happening or what's to come back. I don't know, when did this book, was when was this book written? It was like 20 or 30 years ago. So they gave her visions of terrorism, fighting across the planet, and quite a lot of unrest. And she saw times where it seemed unsafe for anyone to kind of leave the house or go anywhere. And, you know, they shared with her that as the old ways comes to a close and the new ways open, that we would see struggle on the planet and every corner of the planet. And then they showed her that the wars would start to be fought in the legal systems around copyright and the use of words. And I really like the teaching they gave here about the use of words, because words really have a power and a power to form, and it's a creative form of expression. And, you know, they really felt that if you don't create, so they really felt that it's the philosophy of like, why don't I create my idea and you create yours, and perhaps we'll find valuable elements that will teach each other and that will both carry us beyond the original idea created, and that would be more useful. And then they taught about the expression of words as energy, and to speak a word is actually you take that immediate step from thought to actually creating something. So words are like a form of expressed energy. So all words like have a sound frequency. So when you give voice to a sound, you're actually shaping and manipulating the energy to form the basis, which is the basis of a form. So they gave the example of the automobile. So once it's been created, it itself continues to emit like a symphony of subtle sound frequencies that's used to create it. And because it's emanating this pattern of frequency that holds the automobile together as atoms, that emanation then has an effect on the physical reality. So then that comes back as feedback, and then that makes you more inspired to continue to create more sounds and more forms. So it's sort of this endless possibility of creation, because the creation is feeding back to you, and you as the creative being is then interacting with it and continuing the creations. So so the idea is that, bottom line is that the sound and the matrix of sound formed by tones and words, that these sounds actually create form and they create new ideas. So they're really a direct force, like the form of energy, when energy is a moving force directed into form or action. So words are really, really powerful. So when you look at legal systems that interfere with the use of words, and they're really describing the interference of the use of creative energy and creation and personal autonomy and personal power. So, you know, in order to then like manage and work with what's happening on the planet, then they really talk about it's really wise to get peaceful, to find peaceful ways and to find ways to be creative and to find ways to help one another. And that once you've set this precedence on the planet, then it's going to be easy for others to take it up and also continue that on the planet, and to take back your own authority and to find ways to work with the land and to organize yourself in groups where people can live and love and work together. So, you know, and before any great change, you know, there is adversity. So this catapults us into a real raised consciousness. So, and we're capable of doing that. But they talk about us having to do that on many levels, like physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And that really it's actually a new approach is really required right now. We need a change of perception to live on the planet in new ways of peace. So it's a time of global consciousness raising is what they showed her, where the traditional structures are falling away and their new structures are getting set up. So we can use ideas. We know the power of words. We can change lifestyles that all are aligned with life force. And pretty much if it's not aligned with life force, eventually it's not going to continue. It's not going to evolve and survive. So that's our work, to align what we do with life force. So, And in all that teaching that they gave her through those visions, and I get the feeling from reading this chapter that the visions they gave her were also very personal to her with what she was going through in her life at that particular time. She was in quite a bit of conflict. She was trying to set up a restaurant and she was being squashed in doing that. So it was starting to leak money for her. And so these visions really helped her work out, what does she actually do with that? Does she hang on to that situation like a dog with a bone, or does she actually adjust herself and just navigate it because, you know, this is what it is and these are the powers that be? So we'll find out about that later. But it was good that she just went on to straight away apply that to her situation. And so that covers that chapter. And before we have discussions about all of it, let's go on to Mike, who's going to finish the last couple of chapters.
Right. First chapter 8 is titled Weather Extremes. And again, at the beginning of the chapter, she talks about how these little pseudo monks have shown up and they start to show her pictures. And in this case, they take her on a kind of a mind trip where she's going and she sees herself. And to her, it feels like she's kind of maybe in Central Europe in the 15, 1600s in a very rural area. And she sees this group of woodcutters. And she really starts to get really connected to them and appreciate the way that they analyze the wood. And it's almost like they have this very personal connection with each piece of wood, and they know what it wants to give and how to get it back from them. And she's just so connected to this slowly the scene morphs into some scenes of extreme weather situations. And she kind of in her mind doesn't even clue into this. She just continues to be like viscerally connected to the serenity of these woodcutters. And they kind of blast her out of her reverie and force her to come back to seeing all of these extreme scenes of weather. And I've come to realize something, and I think it's even reinforced my feeling more and more as I've listened to each one of the other speakers talk, that they have a technique that they are using when they're passing her information. They show her very extreme, almost shocking scenes and get her attention. And underneath that, they pass a very important message. Marianne just talked about how they passed the whole message of the words in her time. And I think what they explain to her is how the winds work and what the trees and how the winds and the trees interact. And it's really very interesting. They explained that air is composed of these pockets of electromagnetic pockets, they call it, that are positive, negative. They're either very dense or some less dense. And some are large and some are small. And they move through the earth because the earth is also has these areas that are electromagnetically charged, positive or negative, small, large, whatever. And so the interaction between these forces causes the movement of the winds around the earth as they either get attracted to or repelled from electromagnetic spots in the earth. And they go on to explain that this is even a little bit more complicated because now the trees get into the situation, and the trees are capable of generating electromagnetic fields that they can change and modify based on their own intelligence of the needs that are there. And so what the trees do is they can create pockets, temporary pockets of electromagnetic either attraction or repulsion in order to either attenuate these winds or to accentuate them. And she says, without them, you know, the trees, we would have these winds, or they say, excuse me, that without these winds, without these trees, we would have these winds that would be extraordinary, over 150 miles an hour all the time. And so what I've come to understand is that they explain these things underneath these wild kind of visions in order for her mind to be really locked into what they're saying. In the moment, she maybe doesn't get it, but as she's ruminating over it, it starts to sink in. And they tell her that the task of the trees is to balance also the ozone layer. The task of the wind is to balance the ozone layer and also to mix the various particles in the air. That's part of what they do. They bring us cool breezes when we need them, and they bring us warm winds when they need them. And they say, they tell her, look, and this is what I think is really critical, because if you listen to the other speakers, every one of them is also at the end of their discussion came back to saying, but what they said was, and in this case, they said, we do not want you to feel fear. You know, the problem is the way you're living is estranged from the natural world. And each time towards the end of the chapter, what we find is they're giving her questions to pose to herself, which she in turn poses to us. And in this case, you know, when she says, look, I didn't build the dams, I didn't build the nuclear plants, and she's kind of trying not to, she's feeling like responsible. And so she says, I didn't do it. And they said, no, but you know, what do you think is really necessary? What do you believe is really necessary? Because she says, these things, this electricity is necessary for our way of life. And so they say to her right at the end of the chapter, are these things really absolutely necessary, or are they just necessary to continue living the way you're living? And that's how chapter 8 ends. Now we get into chapter 9. Chapter 9 is about the rise of business. And Geraldine talked a little bit about this earlier in her summary of the whole rise of the corporations and all. And again, what I see here is that they're doing the same thing. It's easy to get caught up in all these images, but what they're really doing is passing a message. And the message that they give her, they say, the need for cooperation now is becoming essential. You know, each time what they're saying, this is the way it is, this is what can happen if things continue going the way they're going, but there's an opportunity for you to make a change here. And if you make the change, then obviously this isn't going to be the outcome. What their point that they make very strongly to her right now is, all of what we've been showing you is based on the way you're living right now, which is based on competition. It's based on not letting people have their own say, their own way of thinking. They tell her too many laws now are set as financial traps, so that government gets you in these things. They paint this picture of what could go wrong and why it could go wrong if we keep doing it. And I think that's their message. Their message, and they also say, which I think is really interesting, they say that the unwillingness to conform is the reason you've been chosen to be given the gift of freedom. So sometimes any one of us can feel like, well, because I'm not conforming to what's going on, I'm being persecuted. But the fact that you are in that situation is actually a gift of freedom, because they said the humans that show the signs of thinking for themselves have a better chance of surviving the coming changes. And they give us a bit of an indication on how to go about doing that. They say, you know, security is really going to become run a small business. Run a small business from your home. They call it a cottage business, and they refer to the books, The Third Wave. And they say you also need to learn to grow your own food. You know, invest in this global communications network, because it's important to communicate and to re-educate yourself as to what really are the necessities in life. You know, and start to understand the wisdom of a more self-sufficient lifestyle. You know, and that means maintaining a relationship with the earth. You need to be able to feed, secure, educate, and nurture the personal growth of everyone. And then, you know, the question comes up, why are they showing her all of this? And they tell her, if we can help you understand and know that the change is coming and that it is for the good, then you can prepare and not kill each other in the process. You know, they said, we need to realize that everything we need to live is free. And unfortunately, we've tried to put a price on it and make profits from it. And they said the most destructive concept is that we can or must buy pieces of the earth. So the message that they pass it right at the end of the chapter is, in showing her this, in giving her these teachings, they're really pushing us forward to a life that integrates the best of the old, because there are a lot of good things in what we're doing right now, but also the best of the new. And with real freedom that this will bring, we'll have the time to recreate our lives. And there's really no limits to what the potential of personal development is. So what a high note to end on. I think that is really cool.
Thanks so much, Mark. Really well done. So much in this book and in these chapters to reflect on. It'd really be good to now have a discussion about it, and let's hear what you guys think about it. How have you related it to your lives, and how are you using it? And yeah, what does it mean to you? How about you, Geraldine?
Yeah, I love right in the beginning of the book. It's actually on page 25 or the beginning of that chapter. It brings it back around to what many have said, that it said, people have grown past the structures, but in italics in that chapter 4, there's the evolution of the human is built in. And on then page 26, it says nothing has to happen, but to acknowledge we have cycles in the physical world. These can be cycles in stars, turning from stars to amazing supernovas. So instead of fighting a transition, be creative. So what I've been looking at a lot is, okay, here's a daily thing in my life. It might be that there's X number of projects to complete. And it could be then that I could feel, there's this much to do, or there's, you know, sort of that heaviness about it. But even as they share, keeping old thinking and fear is wasting energy. So just by having that sort of mindset that we've got to do, it's taking energy from us. And as I mentioned earlier, nothing has to happen. So there's a physical realm here there are cycles happening anyway. As we heard from Mike, the trees are communicating, the electromagnetic field or the poles. I have a great appreciation that through my work doing ecology, I do get out to places that have that are little touched by recent humans. And it is so different. And it's only stepping back into this world from those places where there's a fire to cook, there's the wind in the trees, the water's clean, you can drink it, that you go, that's what they're saying. You know, that's what's being said here. Not that we have to go back to minimalizing either, but that we have an inbuilt change. So within us, if we can see that the joy comes from such simple things, there's nothing to fear in terms of loss because it's not there. It's really just being your word and being aware of your thoughts. So that's how I apply it, and it's daily. What am I thinking? What am I creating? And it's okay that things are changing because I've asked for change.
Yeah, powerful. Thank you. And it's a beautiful planet we're on. She's so generous. There's nothing to be afraid of, is there, when we're so loved by this gorgeous planet?
So beautiful.
And what do you have to share, Rosemary?
Yeah, what came to me listening to Geraldine is just some basics. You know, if we look at all this, what we have shared, it sounds rather fascinating. It's just the basic that it's all energy. We are energy, and around us, it's all energy. 99.99% we are energy. So getting caught up in structures falling and buildings falling, or who knows what's going to happen, we have to remind ourselves that is not real, actually. We are energy, and that helps us. Maybe some of the people who might read that go through their fear. And I feel also that we are one of the first things she mentions in the book, of which they gave her as a vision, is the fall of the Berlin Wall. So it seems to me that she wrote some of these things even before that, which means before 1989. And if we look at quantum physics, we know that it is always a present moment who creates the future. So we are in different present moments right now. And certainly we create what's going to happen next as a collective, as human beings. And the other thing I remember, and I don't know which chapter that was, but I remember one sentence they said, and that was something like, well, you can avoid all of that and run away from all of these things if you want and hide, but you cannot avoid human development. And I would like to add, you cannot avoid the evolution of Mother Earth. So we cannot stop that. It's all about development, change, moving on. And what I'm excited about is that it just kind of confirms the things I have been fascinated since years. There's so many beautiful inventions and initiatives now with people. And some of them is maybe still on the border of mass society or mass consciousness, but some of them is right in the front news. I mean, the urban gardening and all the initiatives about alternative energies and also the initiatives about living in tiny houses. These are not any more small, tiny, crazy projects of some outlaw somewhere, but these are really starting to get mainstream things. And I think these are the seeds of the future. So we can do right now, we can start working on ideas we have, how to change things, maybe in education or maybe in gardening. And I think that's what that book is igniting in me and hopefully in many others.
Absolutely. And I think it starts the moment we open our eyes in the morning and what thoughts and feelings we let flow through us and what we put our attention on. And we create this beautiful reality, like you're saying. And Joyce, what are you wanting to share?
I really like the fact that there's many instances through this book of the effect of nature on us, on the world we live in. At different points, they talk about the trees and the effect that trees have, the effect of wind, the effect of rain, even the effect of floods, and definitely weather and storms. We sometimes read in the newspaper that this was destroyed or that it was this effect. But in most cases, over time, it proves that all of these things are happening to create more balance for us in our world. So I just think it's a really important part that they are including, and I'm grateful that they do.
Yes, and it reminds me of what Grandmother Parrish has always shared with us, which is to spend time outside, you know, to get out of those four walls and actually connect up with what's present and with what's always there, loving and communicating with us. And I know just even sitting here doing this call, having my window, massive door open to the outside, I really notice a difference between doing that and sitting in a closed room. It's just those little things that, you know, look at Mike there in some tropical island, and it must feel amazing over there, Mike.
Here's what I've come to understand, and it's kind of the lesson that I have really gotten out of this is, where's the focus? Where's the focus? Because, you know, I applaud these little guys because they are the best marketers in the world. They probably went to some really, really good marketing school, because look what they do. Okay. Number one, they get your attention. They show you these extraordinary visions that just grab you. Then they pass subtly their message among all of that while your attention is fixed. They pass their message through. Then they really make it personal for her and for us, because they're asking us these questions that cause us to reflect on the things they're asking, which are legitimate questions. Do we really need all of this stuff, you know? And then at the end, there's always this call to action. What are you going to do? You know, so, you know, go to marketing school. Basically, those are the steps to selling a product, and they've got it down good. They're explaining to us what we need to know. They're just using a really, really tried and proven technique that works. And hopefully more people will understand this isn't about all the doom and gloom, and this isn't about all the stuff that they show her that's horrendous. Yeah, sure, that can all happen. And if we're not smart enough to get our act together, that could happen. But that's not what they're saying is going to happen. So where's the focus? Do you focus on what could happen, or do you focus on what do you want to make happen? And it takes me back to the, you know, the whole quantum physics. What has quantum physics taught us, if anything? It's taught us that everything exists as a potential. It's where you focus that brings it into reality. You know, to put it in a nutshell. So where do you want to focus? You want to read this book and focus on all that doom and gloom and all the extraordinarily crazy stuff she talks about? Sure, you could do that. But or you could focus on the message that's being passed underneath that says, hey, guys, ask yourself these questions. Do we really need to do this? And is it maybe it's time to make some changes? And I think when you do that and you check your motives to make sure you're really doing it for the reasons you want to do it, and not because you're being pressured or any of those other kind of things, your motives are true, then take action. Don't just sit back and let it all happen around you, because if you sit back and let it all happen around you, it's got momentum. It's just going to keep going. So take action. So that's my message, maybe. And it's a message that I think I've gotten going through this book up to this point. It's been a whole, you know, understanding of what's really happening in this message is in the package. The message is very profound.
Absolutely. And I think it invites us to get really in charge of our thinking. Like, as a psychologist, I see people all the time, you know, and I have to look at my own thoughts, like, you know, fear-based thinking leads you down a certain pathway that can then emotionally validate itself. So you're afraid of something, and then you use that fear to say, yes, there's definitely something to be afraid of, and then you validate that, and you can easily spiral down. In the same way, you can easily spiral up. I mean, putting your attention somewhere else, looking for solution, finding like-mindeds. I know grandmother shared with me the other day that as an empath, you can really take on the environment and the emotions that are going on around you. And in order to manage that, you know, you can go find something beautiful to put your attention on, tend to the garden, talk to the plants. You know, there's so many ways that we actually have control of our own emotional chemistry, of the words we use, of the power of our own words. We're all co-creators, so nothing takes that away. It's just up to us how we use that. What direction do we go with that? And, you know, getting mindful of our emotions and not using fear, and actually getting back in touch with the love and peace in our own heart, or the power of our own being, or like Mike was saying, doing something we can do just to adjust that focus, because we're co-creators. We're all creating this experience on the planet. Everyone listening, everyone here. And so it's up to us.
It's a consistent theme, Marianne, awareness. Be aware, be mindful. We just finished a book on mindfulness. Be mindful of what you're thinking, what you're doing, and what do you really need around you? What is all this stuff? Do I really need it? You know, do I really need this lifestyle with, you know, whatever it is you have? You know, do you really need all that? And I think that's what it's asking us to ask, not in a mean way, just in a really like reflective way. Do you really need it? You know, and I think that's powerful.
Exactly. And we have that authority. We have that power. It's good to be reminded. And Geraldine, I know you had something you wanted to add.
It flows from what you're both saying there as well, in terms of real doingness. Like, we know the importance of beingness, which is what we're looking at in mindfulness, and the beingness is also the focus. And there's also the action, and to have the action preceded by thought. So for this, what comes to mind is, quite often there'll be messages on Facebook or in Messenger, just questions. You know, people will say, well, what about this, or what about that, or what about this? And it's knowing that you can answer from a place that you feel good about it in yourself. So if you handle your own fears, then as the saying goes, you lift 1,000 others. So it's really important. And as we've spoken about before, if you're afraid of something, it's not about ignoring it. Put it to the front and then say, what would I do if A, B, C, or D happened? And then have some sort of resolution for it, enough to allow it to no longer be there, sort of ready to come forth whenever you hear something on the news. So it might even be turning the news off and just getting the key bits of information you need. So being kind on yourself, because a constant bombardment of triggers, that's quite a job. You know, I actually don't listen to a whole lot of news. I do get up-to-date information. I do go to a multitude of perspectives of websites and information, but I certainly don't listen to news. So it's one of those things that I've chosen to do, and I find I'm much happier, say, than people who are close to me who are really watching the news. So that's just one example of something to do. Make it easier on yourself to keep a mindset that you want.
Yeah, I certainly find that helps a lot, is not repeating listening to the news over and over again. That really helps. Yeah, and definitely getting back out into the land. Like, you must be floating half the time, Geraldine, because you're always in nature. So I think that really helped a lot. The trees and nature make it amazing.
Totally does, totally. And when you start to look, let's take one more second. When you start to look, there are so many animals and so many plants and so many times the breeze comes. Yes, I'm a scientist. I've got a science degree from a uni, but there's nothing that speaks to you when you go, that is beyond statistical probability that this happened at that time again and again and again and again. So absolutely all of this is alive.
Yeah, very good. And Rosemary, did you have something else you wanted to share?
Yeah, another kind of a basic remember many years ago, we all kept saying that, and we keep, maybe some of us keep forgetting that we are spirit living in a human body. So and the fear of dying, and if we look at the news, you know, you might entertain the fear of dying, and then again, we let us remind ourselves, we are spirit. This is a spacesuit we are wearing, and we're moving on, and we will never die. So I think that it's really important not to get caught up in the little things and news, just like Geraldine says, but to keep the bigger picture of what is the truth, you know. And science has been proven that truth too, you know. We are energy, we are spirit, and I think it's all about just focus, or just as we know, you get where you put your intention on, and I think it has been shared now where to put your intention on. So take your intention where you want to have it, and not where mass society or mass news tries to get you to.
Absolutely. And is there anything else anyone wants to say before we close for today? Well, it might be a great note to finish on. Thanks, Rosemary. It's time to conclude our studies, and we thank you for sharing your time and energy with us. You matter and count, and you always make a difference. We look forward to being with you next week as we make that leap to greater consciousness. Have a powerful week and allow your light to shine. And always, all good things to you.
OCO.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.